Welcome to the ECM Review podcast, where we delve into the Australian capital markets in 2023 and what's to come. I'm Alex McKinnon.
And I'm Nicole Pedler. Our readers may have also noticed that this year we've expanded the review to tackle all things ECM with a particular focus on secondary raisings.
Starting off with IPOs though, Nicole, what's your take on 2023?
Well, the number of IPOs was down for a second year in a row, and it represented the lowest number of total IPOs in a calendar year since we started collecting this data in 2016. But it was consistent with what's been happening globally. It reflected the continued headwinds issuers have faced in raising capital since early 2022. It was another year of high inflation, rapid increases in interest rates, geopolitical uncertainty, and that all contributed to global and Australian capital markets having their challenges. That said, many companies that we're speaking to seem to be waiting just for those more favourable market conditions before they go public. And by all accounts, those conditions are around the corner.
But despite the challenges, there were still some bright spots, though.
There were. There was an increase in aggregate market capitalisation for new listings in 2023, and there were some real success stories. You look at Redox, you look at Brazilian Rare Earths, they managed to raise significant capital despite the really tough market conditions. And what I think these examples showed us was that while IPOs were scarce, there were still opportunities for strong companies in certain sectors, and particularly those resources and industrial sectors. So that's the IPOs for 2023. Alex, if we shift focus to secondary raises, can you tell us about what happened in secondaries in 2023?
Yeah, thanks, Nicole. Given it was our first year collecting data on secondary raises, we can't compare 2023 to 2022, but what we can discuss is what 2023 looked like. In 2023, the combined placement and SPP emerged as the most popular offer structure, comprising 42% of the secondary raises we surveyed. This was followed by the combined placement and rights issue at 23%. The majority of secondary raises we considered fell within the range of 50 million to 500 million, with only one raise exceeding $1 billion, being Aurora's $1.35 billion placement and Anrio.
And what did you think about the dynamics around offer pricing?
Consistent with what we expected, placements tended to have tighter discounts than rights issues. The average discount to the last closing price for combined placements and Anrios was about 19%, whereas the combined placement and SPP structure had an average discount of approximately 10%. And it's interesting to see the reasons behind these raises, Nicole. Many companies undertook them for non-M&A reasons, such as business growth and balance sheet repair, reflecting more subdued market conditions for M&A.
We did see some pretty interesting raises for M&A though, didn't we?
That's right, Nicole. And a key example was Treasury Wine Estates Patrio, which was used for M&A purposes.
The data also shows that issuers offered a smaller discount when seeking funds for acquisitions compared to other purposes. That was interesting.
That's right, Nicole. M&A on balance had tighter discounts for secondaries than non-M&A raises. We also saw that underwriting played a significant role in secondary raises we surveyed, with 80% of the raises having an underwritten component. Consistent with general approach taken in the market, the larger secondary raises we saw tended to attract a lower percentage fee for lead managers and underwriters, which we suspect reflects the stronger negotiating position of larger issuers and the larger fee in absolute terms. Now, moving on from secondary raises, with tougher market conditions and the need for certainty, we saw increased levels of underwriting on IPOs as well. Did you see any other effects of the cautious market, Nicole?
Alex, we did. We found that on average, 45% of total securities on issue were escrowed for newly listed entities. And there was really two different dynamics between the different scales of companies. So breaking it down, for companies with a market capitalisation of less than 100 million, we saw 20 to 40% of shares were escrowed. And then for companies with a market capitalisation of over 100 million, we were looking at 40 to 80% of shares being escrowed on listing.
And what did you find in respect to the escrow periods?
The escrow, it was very consistent. So generally, it was released between 12 and 24 months following listing in 1 to 3 tranches. And generally, this was to allow the company to get through its first 1 or 2 audit cycles. Almost all of the escrow was released based on time periods, and we really didn't see almost any early release, and certainly at the larger end of the scale, for outperformance or early kind of key performance indicators being hit.
And Nicole, escrow is only really part of the story. Is that right? Our analysis of block trades occurring in 2023 following IPOs from earlier years shows the performance of post-IPO sell downs once escrow was released has been really impressive, doesn't it?
That's right. We've got some great charts in the report this year on this dynamic. We've really seen that when you look at especially the larger end at exits and particularly by private equity vendors, we really think of the listing as step one, and step two as part of the exit path is the post-escrow release sell down. And those blocks on sell down have generally been really successful from the survey we've done of those that have been exited in the last few years. They've generally released greater value overall, even when you take into account the time value of money, than at exit. And that's a win-win. It means IPO investors at the time of float are also seeing the value of their investments grow. On other interesting factors that we've seen through 2023, might turn now, Alex, why don't you tell us about some of the other highlights that we've seen? Did you have any favourite deals for 2023?
Well, I'm biased, Nicole, but HSF is advising Chemist Warehouse on its reverse takeover of Sigma Healthcare, which will see Chemist Warehouse come to ASX as one of Australia's largest private companies. The transaction structure enabled a merger with Sigma and is expected to unlock significant synergies. While small and microcap companies are well acquainted with reverse takeovers as a strategy to achieve a listing, the Chemist Warehouse Sigma transaction shows that it's also open to larger companies as well when there are real benefits from a merger.
Agreed, Alex. And we've actually already been eyeing a couple of new listings that might be good candidates for the reverse takeover path. Or indeed acquisition by a larger ASX-listed company. Did you have any other deals that stood out over the last year?
Yeah, we also advised Light & Wonder on its foreign-exempt listing of CDIs. Foreign-exempt listings on ASX by companies other than those incorporated in New Zealand are rare, with 38 of the 48 foreign-exempt listings currently on ASX being from New Zealand. This deal was unique as it involved a compliance listing only and did not involve an issuance of new shares or CDIs or result from another transaction, for example, a merger, demerger or redomiciliation. The structure meant that Light & Wonder did not have to prepare or lodge an IPO prospectus. Perhaps most importantly, though, the transaction has been a great success for the company, with CDIs closing up over 70% from the time of the IPO and substantial liquidity generated in the CDIs. We're seeing potential new activity for 2024 for dual listings going both ways. That is, either with ASX as a secondary listing or with ASX listed companies seeking a dual listing offshore. The driver for this is entities seeking to access the benefits of capital markets in different jurisdictions.
That's great news, Alex, and it's certainly an increasing trend. So if we turn now to the standout sectors of 2023, if I look at IPOs, it was all about resources stocks followed by industrials. How does that fit in your mind with what was going on in the secondary capital raising space?
The same themes, Nicole. Sector-wise, we saw mining companies dominate secondary raisings in 2023, comprising 41% of the secondary raisings we surveyed. After that, we saw consumer services, energy and software and services companies, which each made up 7% of the secondary raises.
Okay, so now comes the fun part. Get your crystal ball out. Our predictions for the year ahead. If I start with IPOs, it's always challenging, but I think when we've discussed this earlier, we do believe that there is pent-up supply from vendors and founders who do believe that the IPO path is the appropriate one, and that could be matched up with pent-up demand from investors who are seeking new opportunities.
But it's also worth noting, isn't it, Nicole, that on the IPO front at least, both sides remain cautious with concerns about market reception and a general preference from investors for established stocks with a trading history.
I think that's right. That said, if economic conditions improve, and I think improvement here, we're really just talking about stabilisation, we may see the revival of the high-profile IPOs that have been on hold, and I think many people would welcome that. I'd expect that the window for these IPOs would open between September and November. And as we've discussed previously, our view is that all it's going to take is one IPO, a significant company, which is a success, that will open the door and show the path for the others to come through and get the IPO markets back in vogue.
Agreed, Nicole. And with respect to secondary raisings, as we mentioned earlier, we anticipate increased activity, in particular to fund quality M&A and in support of balance sheet optimisation and right sizing of capital structures. We expect the secondary raises across all industries, and you know, in light of our previous comments, we also expect ASX's attractiveness to foreign companies to continue to grow, driven by regulatory sophistication and access to deep pools of capital.
So many readers may be wondering why our report has been titled Turning Tides this year. And just to start to wrap things up, it's because we think 2024 promises to be a year of cautious growth for capital markets, and with many opportunities arising later in 2024.
That's right, Nicole. I think we all remain cautiously optimistic, and I'm certainly looking forward to revisiting this discussion next year to cover the developments throughout 2024.
And that wraps up our chat on all things ECM for now. For those interested, a copy of Turning Tides, our Australian ECM review, can be found on our website. Thank you all for listening.
You have been listening to a podcast brought to you by Herbert Smith Freehills. For more episodes, please go to our channel on iTunes, Spotify, or SoundCloud, and visit our website, herbertsmithfreehills.com, for more insights relevant to your business.